What's happening, guys? Thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. And we got a lot to talk about. Guys, let's begin here. Fighting in the UFC. All right, so first time I ever saw this, it was called the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I cut class my junior year in high school and went with my buddy Jeff Williams down to a video store. A Ma and Pa video store, right? We used to have Hollywood and Blockbuster. Did you guys have those? And they're all completely gone, except either a Blockbuster or Hollywood still exists in Bend, Oregon. Different time though, right? I'm reminiscing. They also had Ma and Pa ones. Go in, you'd rent something, you'd rewind it, you'd bring it back, you'd put it through the little slot if they're closed. But this is what you did for entertainment on the weekends. Jeff and I were down in this little Ma and Pa one. And we found a tape, the UFC, and we were told, and it might have said this right on the cover, but we were told that it was banned in 48 of the 50 states. And as I smartened up and started to realize that was probably in relation to the rules and what commissions and where you could actually hold it, at that time, we interpreted it to mean that in 48 states, this very tape that we had in our hands couldn't even be seen. And we either slipped through the cracks here in Oregon and we're about to go home and watch something that we're not supposed to, or Oregon is one of the two states where it is allowed. Either way, that was a big selling feature for us. Thought we were doing something we weren't supposed to be. Off up to his house we go, we put it in and we watch it. And when it popped up, they made it very clear there was no rules. I went back to, I got number two and number three and number four. And somewhere along the way, they kept saying, no rules, no rules, no rules. There was no rules, no judges, and no time limits. I mean, they would just push this on you. And then the same thing came out, except all of a sudden, there was some judges, of which were there the entire time. They just weren't mentioned. Well, now they were mentioning them. And there was time limits. They were very unlikely you'd ever get to them because they were 30 minutes. But it did actually exist. And as for what you could and could not do, there was only three things. Do not pull his hair, do not touch his eyes, and you don't bite the son of a bitch. So when your rules are no eye gouging, no pulling of the hair, and no biting, would it be fair if we just said you had no rules? Because I think that it is. Like, of all the things on God's earth you could think to do, and you're allowed to do any of them except for these three, of which honor, sportsmanship, the slightest amount of class would prevent you from doing anyway, it feels as though in more of a broad stroke, you have no rules. Can we agree on that? And do they really need to put anywhere that there's no biting? Like, I highly doubt if we went through all of the mainstream sports that you've seen, I highly doubt if we went through ping pong, if we went through golf, if we went through basketball, if we went through tennis, I'm making these up, if we went through diving, if we went through swimming, if we went through gymnastics, I mean, I'm just throwing sports now out at random, but I highly doubt that we will find a rule that says they can't bite. Now, we all know that you're not allowed to bite, but it is so silly and ridiculous that that would ever happen that I'll bet you, if we went and checked any of those sports, baseball, football, I mean, think of the real big ones, I'll bet you there's no non-biting rule actually written down. There's a number of rules that aren't written down. And none of those sports, can you hit a guy with your car? Well, who would ever hit a guy with his car? Well, should we write it down? I mean, it's that insane. It's that silly and ridiculous. Nobody's going to bite somebody. Not to mention you can't bite somebody you have a mouthpiece in. Can we agree that this perception, I make a levelly good point? Okay, great. So, I know about a bite. I was at a bite. Now, I saw a bite on TV. So did all of you. That was when Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield. And what was so interesting about that is the mouthpiece. The mouthpiece are very difficult to get out. Like, a boxer would have a hard time with that glove, right? They can do it, but they have a very hard time. It is generally, in about 10 out of 10, their trainer or manager will get in and know how to get that mouthpiece out. It's a very difficult thing to do with a boxing glove on. So Mike was trying to spit that mouthpiece out because Mike biting Evander was so completely premeditated. And we could see him when they were clinched. We could see Mike moving his mouth He was trying to get it out. At one point, he spit it out. The referee saw him spit it out, picked up, and put it back in. Assumed it was an accident. And a round, if not two, later, Mike finally got it out and he bit the ear. Okay, great. But that was premeditated. I remember it so well. And it was such a moment. And everybody was confused, including Evander. Like, they kept trying to explain to Evander that he'd bit his ear off, that little thing over there on the ground, that's your ear. And Evander was, like, confused. Like, what do you mean he bit off my ear? It was one of these strange moments. Okay, great. Well, I happened to see one. We're in Dallas for the 2000 Olympic trials. And Matt Lindland had just had a screw job of a call go against him. And it was going to cost him the Olympic team. And I mean, it really would be difficult for me to tell you how blatant and what a mistake it was by the referees to not call an illegal leg foul in this match. And that went for the opponent and it cost Matt. And Matt was so frustrated that during the match, at some point, they're clinched up and he bit the ear. Now, he wasn't looking for like a Mike Tyson. He was not looking to actually do damage or hurt or to get the match stopped. He did want a distraction and Matt wanted to be able to get to the body, get him down and score his points. Now, I don't need to digress the X's and O's in that. And me explaining that Matt's intent was only to score isn't to make it look as though Matt did a better or not as bad of a thing, but that is the way that the story went. And those are my experiences with biting. Pretty limited. Watched this my whole life, starting in 1993. I see a cage fight or some level of competition every single weekend, without exception since. Those are my two experiences with biting. The Mike Tyson one that you all saw, a Matt Lindland one that most of you did not see, but possibly heard of. And that brings us to Saturday. Igor went out there and bit Lima. And I, to this point in time, don't know why. I don't know what it was Igor was looking to achieve. I know what Mike wanted to do. Mike was frustrated and he was getting hurt and he wanted to hurt Evander. He wanted to do pain. He had very bad intentions inside of him. Matt Lindland wanted to create a distraction. Make Keith flinch a little bit, go to his ear, look away, something like this so that Matt could attack and score his points. I don't know what Igor was after. Do you? Do you guys know what he was trying to do? And if you look at that bite, you see the top marks and you see the bottom marks. And I'm jumping ahead on this, guys. I'm assuming that you know the story. You know that Dana White has banned Igor for life. That was his debut and his final fight. He is one and done for good. I'm assuming that you know Dana White gave a $25,000 bonus to Lima. Lima then went and got a tattoo and got the teeth marks put on him forever. Dana saw it and gave him another $25,000 because he thought that was a great attitude. I'm assuming that you know all of these things. But I have seen a lot of teeth marks in the sport of wrestling. You also cannot bite somebody in wrestling. As a matter of fact, if you claim a guy bit you, including if the referee doesn't see it, if there are bite marks, the referee will disqualify that guy right away. And it has become a little bit of a problem because a bite, when I say it, and I think when your ears hear it, is defined specifically to somebody who intended to bite you. But in wrestling, it's not always that case. We have something known as a crossface in wrestling. We have a number of things in wrestling where you would bring your arm and it would go right across the guy's face, which means you would be taking your own arm into the guy's mouth. And if you continue to push and his teeth are exposed, it's going to show you those bite marks, even if he never meant to do it, and more importantly, doesn't clamp down. And this got tested in wrestling a number of times where a kid would get up and say, he bit me. You'd see the marks, there'd be blood. Referee who didn't even say, would stop the match and disqualify the kid to the point that I had a guy, my own teammate got put in a precarious position and bit himself. Jumps up to his feet and tells the ref, he bit me. Ref says, what? He shows him the marks, which is what the rule says you have to do. And the referee instantly disqualified the other guy. My buddy bit himself, told the referee it was the other guy, showed him the marks, which is what the rule book says. So I'm only sharing with you, even when I saw these in wrestling, it was generally the top teeth. It was very unusual that we saw on Lima within the tattoo the top teeth and the bottom teeth. Because now it makes you wonder, where was the mouthpiece? You could not produce those kinds of bite marks unless it was in the absence of a mouthpiece. So where was the mouthpiece? You guys might have that answer. I don't. I'm wondering. And moreover, even when I've seen it in wrestling, it's because a guy gets into a bad position. There's chokes in wrestling. Choking is not legal in wrestling, but there are guys that are choking in wrestling. And you'll see a guy as a matter of trying to defend himself. Well, he'll chomp down. I can't explain what Igor was trying to do. I can't explain what threat he found the inner lobe of Lima's bicep to be. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm asking you, do you guys understand? We know he can't bite. We're not going to make an excuse for him. We know that the punishment of lifetime ban is very sincere, so we're not going to kick him. But if we're attempting to understand what happened and why, which just means what was in the mind, if you were to guess what Igor bit him for, was it just anger? Was he about to be choked? Was he not thinking clearly? Was he hungry? I don't know. And I'm curious. And I'm going to get out now, guys, but I want to say one thing, which is Lima was asked about Igor biting him and what he thought should be done. And Lima only said one thing, which is, I do not think he should be fired. He said, it's hard enough to make a living. It's a hard market out there right now for jobs. This was a mistake, but he was punished. He was disqualified. This is a learning moment for everybody, and I'm very confident that he won't do it again. I do not want him to be fired. Now, that's too late. That decision already came down. But that's a beautiful message, right? I mean, not for nothing. That's a very beautiful message. And that was very kind-hearted sportsmanship by Lima. And possibly the most important part of the story, I wanted to make sure that you were aware of. Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler. I don't want you guys to accuse me of being a broken record. This is the topic, right? I mean, it's like music and there's only so many notes. These guys are playing the same notes over and over. It does force a guy like me that likes the story, wants to see the match, and is covering it for you guys to be a bit redundant. But when Conor McGregor comes out and he announces a fight, the one thing that cannot happen because of learning in the past, right? The one group of people that cannot reach out to that red hot stove and touch it, wondering if it's hot, cold, or it's just painted that color, is us. Because we've put our hand out on that stove and we've been burned many times before. So perhaps a new guy comes along. Perhaps a baby was born in the meanwhile. Like, that story is going to keep on burning people. It just can't be us. So when Conor comes out and is the one that says, this summer, Michael Chandler, yeah, all systems a go, I'm going to bust him up, and doesn't know the date, doesn't know where you can get tickets, doesn't know what the nearest hotel is for all the fans that he brings. I mean, they load up jumbo 747 jets and they fly them over in the droves for Conor. That's how over he is, but he doesn't have any of that information. When he gets asked one of the most basic questions, which is just, what weight class are we doing this at? He does not have the answer. Now, for a lot of guys, you could be missing details, but still have your ultimate premise there, which is, I have a fight with this person roughly this time. So it's not completely unheard of. It's not like within our sport, you have to have all this info. But the part that I'm studying and paying attention to is that Michael Chandler then comes out and co-signs it every time. The media, per rules of media, like if you took a college course, if you read a book, if you had an editor that you had to answer to, if you came out with a statement and your source of the statement of what is Conor going to be doing, who's he going to be doing it with, and roughly when will that be? If your source for that is Conor himself, you are allowed under journalistic rules of integrity to run with that and to print it and state it like it's fact. But somewhere along the way, guys got burned so many times, and it was one time too many, that they started bringing in Michael Chandler before they would run it as fact. So now we've got a statement by Conor, and we get it co-signed by Michael Chandler. Now we can go to the presses and put it in the headlines. But Chandler has been wrong each time he has co-signed Conor. And I will just share for you, I've always thought that Chandler was getting duped. It always made me feel bad. It made me think it was starting and stopping, up and down. Made me believe that Chandler, after hearing McGregor say it first, was then telling the media, yes, this is a go. I know it's a go because Connor, most powerful guy who knows everything, I heard him say it was a go. But all of a sudden, now it's misunderstood. Now it looks as though you got it from two sources, as opposed to both sources got it from the same place, which was McGregor. Are you following me? Because I'm just wondering, as a fan, how many times this can happen before we reach fatigue? How many times until we're fatigued? I tell you what, guys, I wouldn't be making this peeps right now. I already reached my fatigue. Because I'm now observing this fight and fight announcement, because now I'm observing this from a completely different standpoint, which is, can they still captivate headlines? They told the story that we're going to fight each other in summer in Las Vegas. Five rounds at 185 pounds. Ha, ha, ha. Everybody laughs after 185, but each time you ask them, they always say 185. So ha, ha, ha. How many times can they do that before we don't care? And I'm about to the point where I believe we don't care. And my evidence for that is when I saw this story, and I scanned the dirt sheets all day. Every time I grab my phone, I'm refreshing. Text from my wife, see what she says. Write her back. Heart emojis. See you at dinner time. Go to the dirt sheets. Scan the dirt sheets before I put my phone down. Just for example, I'm there all day. And when I went to the dirt sheet of Bloody Elbow, and when I saw the news that it was Connor versus Chandler sometime this summer, it was three down from the top. That is stunning. If it was three down from the top, as many times as I scroll and refresh that page, it's making me believe it never was at the top. It was either at the top and knocked down in record time, or it never even made it to the top. And Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor, fight announcement, never up until that point had been anything but front page, top of the line news. And it's very interesting. And Chandler keeps going right along with it. And I don't know why. Perhaps I'm wrong, and perhaps, right, you finally... Brer Rabbit, right? The boy that cried wolf. Eventually, there was a wolf. So maybe Chandler is getting information. He's confident in it. Maybe he isn't just piggybacking off of Connor. But it's where the whole thing started from in the first place, right? Michael Chandler never wanted Connor McGregor because there was something personal. Michael Chandler never wanted Connor McGregor because it was a way back to a title, or he had a title in the first place. Michael Chandler wanted to associate himself with the most famous guy and the most eyeballs in the sport. Wanted to go out there and beat him in competition and take as many of those headlines and as many of those eyeballs, get him on his bandwagon as he could. Everything sounds right here. There's nothing there that you would disagree with, but the other side of the coin is when you hitch yourself to a wagon, even if that wagon keeps going up the hill, if it keeps being good things, if it breaks an axle and starts going down and you're still hitched to it, you're going down with it. I don't know how long they could dangle such a topic, but I can't call and ask them because their story together, they've like partnered up on this thing, is that they've already got a deal done through agents, of which don't exist, for some time this summer, which does exist, has two shows, one of which hasn't been announced, and neither looks like it wants it as a main event. I mean, not for nothing, right? Like, this is starting to be a very difficult thing to know. And there hasn't been a fight, a big mega fight, in the history of the organization where the organization doesn't let us know. Or even if the cat got out of the bag, the organization would then confirm and let you know, as annoyed as they might be. When the cat gets out of the bag, the organization up until this point has never denied something and then just waited till the right time and then gone, and looky here, we do have it. And after they said they didn't have it, it's not done that way. It simply isn't done that way. I do believe Connor is sincere. I do believe that he wants to fight. I do believe at one point in time he was offered a placement on the card that was not main event and that brought him pause. I brought that up to you guys and on other channels, and now Connor has addressed that a week ago. He didn't say I heard Chael say, but he brought that up specifically and said, I don't care if I'm the first fight of the night. It's a comeback fight for me. I'd like to dip my toe in it. I'd like to go three rounds. Now, Conor will never get three rounds, but I love that he even said that because that's what a true competitor would say. That's what hungry Conor, poor Conor, unfamous Conor, that's what he would have said. And there is a massive question, which is he still that guy? You'll hear Dana talk about and do interviews with McGregor, and he'll just talk about the financial success that Conor has had and continues to enjoy. And he'll use that as a question, a broad question to the audience at large, and just say, if you didn't have to, if the money you were going to earn did not impact your life anyway because you have so much other money, is this something that you would do? And nobody ever says, yes, I would. I remember every single time Dana said it, because I would. It would not impact it. I wanted to compete. I wanted somebody to compete against. I love the eyeballs and the attention. All of that was true too, but it was about competition first. And the money and or the fame, those were byproducts. I don't say that to slip myself in there and to let you know where I stand on it. I don't mean to be on the more noble side. I just can't use the golden rule of put myself in their shoes and imagine what I would do. Because it appears that I'm very different than what they would like to do. But I think Conor's very sincere. And I don't think he's holding out behind the scenes for money. I think there's something that is throwing this match off. Fine. But at the same time as we can't clear Conor McGregor and say it's not him, he's clean. At the same time that we can't point to Michael Chandler and say anything he's done wrong because he hasn't. He has done everything right. He's clean. We also can't point to the organization and say they have done absolutely everything. Their hands are clean. We can't do that because this is a very rare situation where of the three people involved, the organization, Chandler, and Conor, those three are not saying the same thing. Like whatever is really going on, if it's on Conor's side and the organization is just keeping him out of it, or if it's the organization itself, Conor hasn't outed him yet and Chandler hasn't been given any information. It's a very tough mystery to solve. Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor, as of right now, claim that they're fighting this summer. Now, before you go to Ticketmaster, before you log in online, I'm just going to let you know now, when you get to that agent or you get to that checkout counter and you type in the show you want to go to and you call it sometime this summer, no tickets are going to come up. Don't think you need to restart the computer. Don't think you need to ask that clerk to talk to his manager. And if you do that, the manager comes out and you tell him again you'd like to get two tickets. And he asks you when, and you say to that fight that's going down this summer, you're not going to get any closer. And when you call those hotels to see if they got availability, when you call your favorite restaurant because you're meeting your friends out there and you want to make sure you have a time to sit, and you say about that time that Conor and Chandler are going to fight, they flip the calendar open and they start looking for it. They're not going to find those dates. And at what point do you stop to care? Because the only thing that that fight has is that you care. I didn't say to you, at what point does that fight not matter? That fight has never mattered. The status of MMA, the state of MMA, within each and every weight class, 55, 70, 85, or a catch weight that they make up, has never been in peril, has never been affected. Nobody is waiting and standing by for the result of. The fight has never mattered. But we do care. For a little while. And it looks like we're running out of time. According to the dirt sheets I go to, third down from the top. Third down from the top. Not much further you can go. They're going to do the fight. They got to make the fight. No more talking about talking. No more meeting about meeting. If you want to fight, do the fight. A picture? Was it a video or a picture, guys? When I saw it, it was a still. It was him on the heavy bags. And he said, somebody's going to pay very soon. Now, I got to tell you, I go into the category of Nick Diaz, Mark. If Nick Diaz is doing it, you can count on me. Whether you're talking about my money, because I'm going to go. If you're talking about my time and participation, because I'm going to stop and I'm going to watch. Or if you're talking about social media and I'm going to pitch in and I'm going to speculate as to what does this all mean. But I fall for it every time. Like, this isn't something new. When Nick puts something out and there's some kind of caption, someone's going to pay very soon. I always go down the road of trying to guess and interpret who could that be and what does it mean. And is there a relevance to the heavy bag? The heavy bag is something that we do in MMA, but a heavy bag is a boxing tool, right? When MMA came along, the heavy bag was already here, and it was here because boxers used it. Why do I bring that up? Well, if all I have to go on is a heavy bag, the last time I heard Nick speak at a combat event, it was post-show Dallas, Texas, when his brother Nate and Jake Paul boxed. So if I was to take that in conjunction with the heavy bag, and if I was to read way too much into a simple caption, it would make me wonder, is Nick talking about coming back and doing some form of boxing? And it does seem like there's more opportunity in that than anything else. So if that is the road, who'd be coming back against? When could we expect him? Weight class would be interesting. I would take the other two first, though. Who the opponent is would be the number one thing I wanted to know. And they can figure out, like, truly, before we even get down to, is it going to be boxing or is it going to be MMA? I would want to just first know who. Because whatever it is, whatever form of contact, they get down and leg wrestle on the ground, I am going to watch if Nick's involved. And can you guys relate to that? I think so, right? There's something special about Nick Diaz. Okay, so what we do know is that the PFL has made an offer to Nate. And where the PFL left off was $15 million for Nate Diaz to fight Jake Paul, Unified Rules Mixed Martial Arts. That's what we know. And that was the second offer by the PFL. They had started at $12 million. When they did not get a response, they came back, they upped it three. They didn't say this is our best and final. I thought this is their best and final. And I knew that Nate wanted to fight Paul again. Nate had even challenged Paul to a fight, but Nate wanted it in boxing. And while that might seem like a fine detail, it's still a detail that wasn't met. I mean, not for nothing, that would seem like a real fine point. Well, you wanted it in boxing, but we're going to do it in MMA. It is the one part of Nate's request that wasn't met that makes you sit back and go, well, are they going to get that done or not? Okay, now we know what I just said to be true, all of those things, including the loose ends, but we do know that that is accurate and out there. What we don't quite have clarity on is this business about Nate, and George Masvidal. Because they are allegedly going to box in June in California. Does that all sound right to you guys? And Masvidal confirmed it, even stated the date, June 1st, even stated the location being in California. And the one thing that we didn't get is a confirmation from Nate. And I couldn't help but notice that. Like, there was no part of when Masvidal delivered this news, there was no part that Masvidal was out there trying to get attention. Masvidal was reporting something. He had information. And he was the one that was given the go-ahead to bring that information to the public. Point that I'm attempting to make for you is it was a very real and very legitimate announcement by Masvidal, at least Masvidal thought. And then I'm just chill, right? I'm just chill sitting back here going, oh, this is great. I want to watch Nate beat up George Masvidal. I'm going to find my way to California to be there to support Nate when he beats up George Masvidal. But I couldn't help but notice that I did not hear a boxing match is going to happen between Masvidal and Nate from Nate. I hadn't heard that yet, and I was waiting for it. So hold that thought, because again, it's a loose end. It doesn't go anywhere. I'm giving you accurate information that's out there, and yes, we're left hanging. So you're not hearing me wrong. Any new viewers here, you're not hearing wrong. Oh, I must, Chael must have finished that thought. No, that's actually where that thought gets left off. And now is where we insert the very first piece that I spoke to you about, which is Nick working out on a heavy bag. So George Masvidal is planning to compete, and he is planning to box on or about the date of June 1st. And it looks as though he's planning to box somebody with the last name of Diaz. Specifically by George, that was Nate. But now all of a sudden you see Nate and you see where this would be interesting. You see where that tag off could be very interesting. And you see where you guys are going to be met with some disappointment because you love Nate. But you would fully accept it and not have that same disappointment if it was Nick. Like, that would feel right to you. Still Diaz. And there was something going. At some point, there was something going. And this is right after they first fought for the BMF. That was years ago. I'm going off my memory here, but there was something about that. Nick was there, and somehow Nick and Masvidal ended up in each other's wheelhouse through the media. All right, so just in, guys, from Ryan. I'm trusting you can hear, but a voice of God, if you couldn't hear him there, Ryan is saying what I said was a still photo of Nick on a heavy bag boxing. Ryan's saying, no, it's an actual video, and if you play it, there's kicks involved. So Ryan's asking if that changes my mind, that they're just going to box, or does this prove he's just trying to get in shape, or is he maybe looking at MMA? Guys, I got to just shrug my shoulders. I don't really know what it means. And I have seen from Nick a couple of times things that appear to start and stop. And every time Nick does an interview, and every time Nick puts a video or picture out of himself, right? A picture's worth 1,000 words, and I will always judge him. And every time I will come to the same conclusion, which is how good he looks. You know, when a fighter comes back and you find out, yeah, he's back and he's been slumping off, but he's really going to focus for 8 weeks. You say, oh my God. Wouldn't life be nice if you just had to really buckle down for 8 weeks? You could be a knucklehead for 6 years in a row, but if you just had 2 good months. But it never seems to be the case with Nick. Like, when you're looking at him, his body, it never gets loose, never gets soft. His weight never spikes like so many fighters generally do. It speaks to some level of athletic output, whether he's doing things for a triathlon. I wouldn't know. Maybe he's just doing the biking portion or the swimming. Maybe he's doing something. But whenever you see him, you always realize, hey, that guy's not far off from a competitive weight. So when Ryan asked me, does the addition of kicks on a bag matter? Yeah, it sure does to me. It matters because I started this a little bit confused and speculating what Nick was going to do. And I was going to say he might be tagging in for Nate on this boxing thing with Masvidal. But now that I know that kicks are involved, hey, listen, maybe Nick is going to tag in for Nate and he's going to be the one to take on Jake Paul. Now, Nick can go and forge his own trail. He doesn't have to do something that little brother brought to the table first, but it does appear that Nate doesn't want to get out and go do ball. He doesn't want to box over here and do MMA over here. It looks like Nate is trying to focus in and only one person's going to draw that. I'm guessing, guys, I'm a little light on details. I could call Nick or Nate right now. They would tell me. But I never do that. And you want to know why? I have more fun speculating. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of all three. I like knowing what Masvidal's got planned. I'm a fan of the Diaz boys, Nick and Nate. Whether they're boxing, whether they're MMA. Sometimes I don't always want the answers up front. Sometimes I don't always want to call and hear what's going on. Sometimes I want to sit back and enjoy the presentation. The same as you. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition. My wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. Guys, I like to bring you a weekly recap on this. And I certainly don't go into the category of hater. I go into a little bit different category. I'm not just a fan. I'm not just a spectator. I'm also trying to learn at all times. And we are in an industry that is ever changing. I mean, just by example, when I started in this game, this was the pay-per-view business first and foremost. It is not the pay-per-view business, first and foremost, anymore. That is an arm of it. But to illustrate that point, because I've made that before and I have people in the comment section, and they're completely lost. How I could say that, or why is it that I believe that they've changed? So let me just slow down very simply, but let you know from my experience, okay? 1993 is the first time I ever saw mixed martial arts. And from 1993 until 1995, I saw mixed martial arts one way and the same way, which is I would keep my eyes open at the local movie rental checkout. And 2 to 3 months after an event had happened, it would make it to VHS. And so I could go in and rent it. And the internet wasn't around in 93. The first time I ever heard the word email was 94. But the first time I ever had an email was 96. So even when the internet was around, it took a long time to catch on, and nobody had the internet in their hand. The term smartphone did not come along until just short of 2008. So I'm just trying to share for you, like, sports are one thing that you have to have live. Sports and news are the only two things, but you have to have them live. Well, not prior to the internet, on not something as small and fringe of a niche as mixed martial arts. Nobody was discussing it. There was no chance that you were going to run into somebody that was there or that had rented that VHS before you did, and you're going to have a spoiler. So I watched this way until 95. Now, in 1995, I had started college, and they were going to hold something on New Year's. So I guess officially closer to 1996, but it was called the Ultimate, and Tank Abbott was going to be part of it. And Tank Abbott had come out and trained with my head coach, Mark Schultz, at the school I was currently attending, Brigham Young University. And I remember where I went to watch that. It was very hard to find somebody that had it. I remember how excited I was, and that was the first time that I was able to watch it on pay-per-view. Moving forward, the only way I was able to watch it was pay-per-view. And eventually something came along called the Pride Fighting Championship, and they were also on pay-per-view. And in 2004, I got to attend my first ever live event. So now, instead of having to watch it late on VHS, or getting to watch it live on pay-per-view, but waiting all those months in between, I'm finally at it live, and when my live experience ended, I go back home and I continue to watch it on pay-per-view. And along comes a year called 2012. And in 2012, a deal came along and was struck between the UFC and 21st Century Fox. And Fox was bringing us, and you'd seen this through The Ultimate Fighter on Spike as well, regular content that was a contest of mixed martial arts. It was the first time you didn't have to wait for it to be delayed, see it on VHS, get a ticket, hope to be there live in attendance, or watch it on pay-per-view. It was a changing of the guard for our industry as a whole. It was an important thing. If you wanted to make money within an industry, it's important that you understand the industry, so you can understand the game that needs to be played or the manipulation of the rules that needs to be done if you yourself would like to be involved and succeed. And I had guys all around me that did not make the most simple and basic of observations, including the ones I just laid out for you now. They had no idea. And we had media all around us that had no idea what the actual business was. And you had very good promoters who knew people were trying to get into their business in their wheelhouse, and they knew how important it was to keep them out. What are the finances? What can be monetized? Where do the reserves come from? It is so important that nobody fully understand that. That the promoters began to give two pieces of information, and they would give it all the time. They would give the live gate, and they would allow a speculation for the pay-per-view, even if they were to deny it or say, we will not talk about that. They made sure that the live gate and the pay-per-view was discussed at every single press conference. And the reason they did that was because they knew over time they could get the smartest, most observant members of the crowd to believe that that's what two revenue streams that kept the lights on. We're in the live gate and we're in the pay-per-view business, the end. And they accepted and they believed that for a meaningful amount of time. I don't know, and as I look at Mike Tyson and Jake Paul, I don't know what Netflix's new plan is. But I do trust very much that they have a new plan. Netflix single-handedly saved comedy. Are you aware of that? Like, if you were an aspiring comedian, you were a little kid, you wanted to grow up and you wanted to be a comedian, and you don't meet a whole bunch of those. Like, if you go back to yourself and you just think of all the kids you went to school with, sitting around and talking, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Can you remember any boys or girls that said, I want to be a stand-up comedian? Probably not. I had one. Matt Silver, who then actually did it. Matt saw his dream through and he started performing. He's a very funny guy, but I'm just sharing with you, it's very rare. And it became even more rare and people stopped dreaming of going out and doing it until Netflix came along. And Netflix showed you, no, you can still be rich, you can be famous, you can be a star, you can have that stage to yourself, you can have people world around stopping what they're doing and paying money to hear you with that microphone telling jokes. Netflix did that. They revolutionized it. Absolutely, they did. So my guess is they have a plan for combat, and their plan is going to be very disruptive to the current model. But the current model has changed and been disrupted since I began following it in 1993. So I'm curious about this. And Mike Tyson and Jake Paul are still going to have some principles that they're going to have to follow. They're going to have some ingredients that must be part of this. Somebody is doing a very good job with Mike Tyson. Somebody has grabbed a hold of Mike early and said, Mike, every week, I'm going to feed you a line. I'm going to feed you an angle. We're going to video it. Deliver it the best you can. Take it out to this new thing that you didn't have when you're competing. It's called social media. Just trust me on this. And Mike has said, okay. At one point, Mike was wearing a shirt. Said, sign the contract. But that was on the shirt. And it had like this line with an X to it. And that's where you were supposed to write Jake Paul. I mean, it was very simple, but it hadn't been done before. Had that caught on. Now you got a merchandising opportunity. Right? I mean, there was something there. The person that thought to do that. Good job. It was creative. Not to mention Mike didn't go too far to where it looked like he was performing or blatantly reading somebody else's lines as a way to hype a fight. It was short. It was concise. It was something. Jake and Mike, while being used for something different. This is not to see who can outbox who in yesterday's guard and the new guard. It's not about that. There's a model that needs to be tested by Netflix, and they need somebody to come in and do it. But with that said, all fights do have to have an answer a question of why. And the cute stuff and the blurbs or the t-shirts and the here's the X and sign your name here. There has to be a reason why you're fighting. And that one is going to be very tough. Like when they get their collective heads together, they need to make sure that they have a creative person that begins to figure that out. And the story's there, by the way. Mike Tyson can be coming back to stop Jake Paul. Jake Paul is making more money, getting more attention, selling out arenas faster. He's getting all of the top billing. He's got the biggest press conferences. He's becoming a face of a sport that does not belong. He did not come up the hard way. He did not come up through the golden gloves. He didn't have his single mother drag him in to a gym to try to keep him disciplined and off the streets like so many great boxing stories. It's a very different story. So Mike Tyson is coming in to save boxing. He's coming back off the shelf, something he doesn't even want to do, but he's doing it for the greater good of the sport. And that's a really big part of it. And they haven't taken it from that angle. In very real life, should Mike fail, that is how, and that is the only way how, you're going to get Canelo to step to Jake Paul. Jake versus Tyson is the precursor to getting Jake what he ultimately wanted from day one, which was a shot at Canelo. And if Mike begins to tell the story that I am here to save boxing, that is why I'm here. It is not about the money. I am here to risk my health. I'm here to come off the shelf to stop a guy who's taken all the attention, all the money, and all the headlines. And if Mike is to fail, that is where you have Canelo. But now you have a story, and now you have a reason why. At this point, they have no story. They have no why. The bigger problem, they don't know that that's missing. They believe with the fame of Mike Tyson, they believe with the notoriety of Jake Paul, they believe bringing them together and something about Dallas, Texas and 80,000 and somehow Netflix weighs into it. That is not a story. It's not enough. That's a way for four really well-known entities to all lose together. And I'm only bringing you the weekly recap because I am interested. I do want to see what they're doing here. And regardless if this turns a profit or it doesn't, they're working the kink out over at Netflix. They have an idea. They're moving forward. They're playing a different game. So I'm sharing that with you because this doesn't have to be an overnight success, but to have something here and do make it a success. And I know if I was involved, my ego is directly tied to those numbers. Nobody's ever lost a dollar working with me, but I will make sure that they don't lose a dollar. I will study that whole thing. I will see what's going on. I will know what cracks need filled. It's a little bit different, but it doesn't make it any less important. So that's your weekly recap on Mike and Jake. But eventually, they have got to figure out why and what is this about. And once they get there, bring it to the audience. Let that story be told. You're going to have a hard time having a story better than one that I just gave you. And it's true. If Jake wants Canelo and Jake has wanted Canelo since he started this entire game, then it's got to be Jake taking on boxing as a whole, which is where Mike Tyson's the white knight to save boxing. And if we do get that story out and Canelo does come forward and say, yes, as a matter of fact, it's going to really upset me. If a non-boxing Jake Paul takes out everyone's icon, I will step in and fill. It's true. There's no reason to hide it. We're in need of a why. I'm suggesting for you, we don't need to make one up. I'm suggesting for you, it's already there. I'm just reminding you, they've yet to spell it out as clearly as I just did. NCAA tournament is in the books for 2024. I have so many thoughts on this. I have so many thoughts, starting with, who is the outstanding wrestler? Now, who is the outstanding wrestler? So many times, guys, the people that vote on OW, outstanding wrestler, big deal within the wrestling community, that will stick around forever. Forever. You're talking about, essentially, just so you know, the GOAT of the tournament. But outstanding wrestler of the tournament turns into outstanding wrestler in the tournament. All the time. Very hard to get around. Very hard to get coaches who agree with me in an environment like this where they're being calm and they're being rational. But then when it's time to vote, they will go with the outstanding wrestler in the tournament. For example, if you are an NCAA champion, every tournament you enter the following year, you will win outstanding wrestler, as long as there's no other NCAA champions in the tournament. Every tournament you enter, you will win outstanding wrestler. Because when it's time to vote, they will go with outstanding wrestler in the tournament. Who's the best guy that entered, as opposed to outstanding wrestler of the tournament? Who, within this whistle-to-whistle, wrestled the best? And I'll never get a bronze medalist there. I just won't. It is the distinction that gets reserved for champions. Like, when it's time to vote OW, outstanding wrestler, they will wait till the end of the tournament. They'll look at everybody that won, but then you're just from that field. There's 12 weight classes. You'll look at those 12 champions as a way of determining it. But I don't know that it accurately answers the question. Like, if you're going to tell me that Ryan Crooklyn wasn't the outstanding wrestler, I'm going to have a big problem with that. Ryan Crooklyn's draw is criminal. The end. They gave Ryan Crooklyn, who was undefeated 18-0, conference champion, the number two seed. And the reason that's relevant is that puts him on the same side of the bracket as Vito. Now, Vito is not only much older. It's Vito's seventh year, by the way. Crooklyn's a redshirt freshman. Vito is the defending NCAA champion. And while being the defending champion, he is the reigning world champion. So the intimidation and the likelihood of Crooklyn being able to beat Vito is completely stacked against him. But Crooklyn did beat him very early in the season. Then he beat him again very late in the season, known as the conference championship. So Crooklyn, only reward for beating the reigning world champion twice, when he gets put on the same side of the bracket, his only reward is that he's going to have to do it a third time. Now, that never should have happened. Crooklyn should have been up top. Fix and Vito should have been on the bottom. Not maybe. For sure. So not only do they put Crooklyn on the bottom, they give him the toughest draw. Now, the toughest draw could be argued the day that it came out. It cannot be argued now. Crooklyn in the quarters had Nasir Bailey from Little Rock. In the quarters, that's who Crooklyn had. Now, Nasir Bailey was the hardest draw of any of the guys that won in the quarters. That's not an opinion. That's provable now that it's over. We all knew this going in, but you could still argue. You can't now because Nasir Bailey and Crooklyn rematched for third. Only one guy came through the backside that lost in the quarters, and it was Nasir Bailey, who was Crooklyn's draw. Crooklyn, who was 18-0 and had beaten the world champion twice. Not only does he get the seed that he's supposed to get, he then has the hardest draw, and he still found a way. And you won't hear him complaining or telling the story the way that I'm telling it right now. He didn't say anything. He went out there, he handled his business, and when he got his heart broken, which was suffering a loss to a guy who he'd beaten twice throughout the season, he didn't complain once. He regrouped and he came back for third. And he absolutely should be considered for outstanding wrestler, but it doesn't work that way. You cannot be on the backside. I remember the year when it happened to Hidley and Jason Nolf himself said he should have had a takedown. But there's no way that you can bring a guy back from that side of the bracket and put him, even when you start to talk about, well, we had Fix and we had Vito in the finals, and both of them have been in college for 7 years because we had that thing called COVID, and then they understood what an Olympic red shirt was. Then they had their normal red shirt year, and then we ran it, like, before you even get to the fact that four guys who in a normal circumstance, the college age, Crooklyn beat them all, was the champion. Before you even get to that, okay. Now let's look at the finals because that's all we're ever going to be allowed to. Starocci came into the tournament, another guy whose seed was criminal. And there's a little bit of a criteria that they must follow. And criteria for seeding for what you must follow is done for a good reason, but I've never seen it work out. I just personally haven't seen it. We have it right here in Oregon for our state tournament. I mean, to explain to you the mess that it creates. And the NCAA doesn't have, it's not absolute hard and fast. There still is a little wiggle room where an adult in the room can speak up as long as he can find other adults in the room to create a loud and powerful voice. But at any rate, they take Starocci and they make him the number 9 seed. Now, the problem with that was the reason they did it where everybody knew Starocci is the guy. But because they wanted to avoid future defaults at a conference tournament, they were going to use Starocci to prove to the world, we will count those as matches. And if you forfeit, we will count those as losses. And all losses are created the same. And to prove that we're serious, we're going to put you at number 9. Great. I get that. I actually like and support that. I hate the default as much as anybody. When I tell you it's criminal, though, it's not an opinion. Because now you want to turn to the number 1 guy. And if you really wanted a litmus test on is this right or is this wrong, you would turn to the number 1 guy, your number 1 seed, who is Makai Lewis, and you would say to him, do you want Starocci in the quarterfinals? Or at random, would you like somebody else? Of the 32 guys here, would you like us to guarantee you don't have Starocci? We don't know who you will have, but you won't have him. And he would say, of course I want that guarantee. Of course, I, as a national champion, should not meet up in the quarterfinals with last year's national champion, who, by the way, I wrestled for the national championship last year. We should not rematch last year's championship match in the quarterfinals. But it's what they did. And what does the winner get? The winner of that match gets to go to the semis and face an NCAA champion. That's right. They put 3 NCAA champions on the same side. And we all knew that was wrong. We knew it was wrong, and we said that it was wrong. And we heard the debates as to why it's not. But now it's done, and we were right. Now it's provable. Now that it's done, and Shane Griffith came through and got third place, we have now proven those three guys should not have been on the same side. Now that Storoci, who we all knew should be seeded one and who we all knew was number one, now that he is in fact number one, we see the mistakes made with the seeding, but nobody ever wants to wear that, right? Somebody was in the seeding room that knew Storoci should be one. And somebody didn't speak up because somebody else said, no, he forfeited the Big Tens and he should not be number one. So they allowed this to happen and it's a mistake. It's a massive mistake. And when you look at Storoci and you're going to tell me you're not going to give him the outstanding wrestler, he had to defeat two NCAA champions just to get to the finals. In the finals, the second best guy in the country can't score a point on him. And I've heard the argument, well, Storoci goes out there, he's got a freshman, he only can beat him by 2 points. He can only beat him by 2 points. The score was 2-0. The second best guy in all of America within the time constraints of an NCAA match couldn't get a point. Not one. That's the compliment to Storoci. And that's before you get into he's compromised and he's hurting his knee and he's never quite wrestled like this. Before you get into any of that, on a bad day, on that day, the second best guy cannot within 7 minutes get a single point. There's your outstanding wrestler. But they didn't give it to him. In fact, he wasn't even really considered for it. And if you were to look at what Carr did, Carr having to overcome not only last year's championship, but this year, as in 2 weeks ago, conference championship. And Carr had to overcome that and find a way to beat O'Toole. And the only reward he got for beating O'Toole is that he draws into Messenbrink, who, by the way, Messenbrink, as the freshman, is the one that should have had to jump on that grenade. Whether it was Carr Messenbrink in the semis or Messenbrink O'Toole in the semis, it should not have been Carr and O'Toole, who is last year's finals match, both of them champions, on the same side of the bracket. It shouldn't have been that way. No matter how this is written down and no matter what the clause is, there should have been somebody that was good enough at arguing and could pull enough reality and logic into it to have separated them, but they didn't do it. And Carr went out there and he found a way anyway, not once, but twice. And that should have really been looked at for outstanding wrestler. And I don't want to take away from Aaron Brooks. That isn't my intent. Aaron Brooks had enough praise, though. He got the main event spot on ESPN. It's not as though a credit and appreciation isn't shown to Brooks. He got the main event spot. They ran the heavyweights out there first so they could go through the whole gamut and feature Brooks. All right, make sure to add that part of the story because I'm not attempting to take away. He got a number of really good things, but then you have an outstanding wrestler award. And that entire tournament, they were going to give that to Brooks as long as he won. They had built him and made him the main event before we ever blew the very first whistle. And I'm just sharing for you, what's the point of doing it? If it's already predetermined, it's already decided, what's the point of doing it? And Aaron Brooks, who David Taylor himself, who Kyle Snyder himself says, is the second best wrestler in the world. If you can get out of the country, get past Brooks, you're very likely to win the gold medal. Just might be the best wrestler in the tournament. But that's not what the award was for. It was for the best wrestler of the tournament. So now, like so many other things, I have to fix it. And I have to tell you who the best wrestler, whose performance, who mentally and physically, who overcame when it was hard, who did things that they weren't supposed to do. Not that they went right along with the script and they were the favorite, where they weren't the favorite. They had to overcome, they had to pick themselves up because they wanted it and they found a way. And that outstanding wrestler was David Carr. All right, you guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.